Hey, thanks for listening to 90.7 FM WGXC. This is Tino Gonzalez. Tonight, I'm going to get right to it. Here, you'll be listening to another episode of Faded Discs In-Flight Music, a duet, so to speak, between moments from Wendy Connor's UFO radio archive and self-recorded ambient music. Enjoy.
This is Frank Edwards reporting. How real are the flying saucers? Nine, the Inspector General of the Air Force notified all air base commanders. Has issued orders advising the military on how to handle fragments. Let us consider the case of the Argentine naval transport, the Punta Medanos, which was making its way across the South Atlantic near the Falkland Islands in September of 1960. An enormous craft of unknown type and origin approached the naval transport from astern, 100 feet in diameter. It was gray in color, like dull aluminum, and in shape it resembled two huge soup bowls placed together, rim to rim. As the strange craft approached, slowly and silently, at about 100 feet above the sea, the Punta Medanos compass gyrated wildly. The lights went out. The intercommunication system went dead. The radar and radio ceased to function. The ship was virtually helpless. For 20 minutes, this state of affairs continued. By a greenish glowing disk with a faint red glow on one side, it was traveling east to west, which no man-made satellite does. 200 persons at the tracking station watched the object on the gear there. They saw it approach Cooper. Then it veered away from him and sped on out into space. It was only the first of many such cases. Every American astronaut since Gordon Cooper has also been approached. The astronauts, and each time they remain a little longer. In 1965, Major Edward photographed one of these objects near the capsule in which he was orbiting the Earth over the Pacific. Ocean. And the photograph, as released by the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, clearly shows a bright egg-shaped thing which leaves a visible trail from its propulsion system. The astronauts have all been approached by UFOs. One of our surveyors. The thing simply zipped away at fantastic speed and left the jets far behind. That was in May of 1946. It was just 1 year after man had exploded his first atomic device. Was there any relationship between the those two historic events? Or was it pure coincidence? Did the flash and the powerful radiation of those atomic explosions attract the attention of something or somebody out there in space? If so, who or what and from where? When the thing could still be seen the next morning, the battleship opened fire, first with the 5-inch gun, later with the big 14-inch rifles. When this cannonade was finished, the object was gone. There was no indication that it had been hit. When the official report was made by the commander of the battleship, had only been shooting at the planet Venus. Thus, as far back as 1947, the official policy of issuing explanations which ignored the facts was in evidence. For one thing, the object which followed the battleship New York was in the wrong direction to have been the planet Venus. Position relative to either the ship or the horizon, as a planet would have done. And perhaps most important, and most devastating to the official explanation, neither the radar nor the rangefinders on the battle ship could possibly have picked up the planet Venus or any other planet. If this was indeed the first case of deriding those who reported unconventional objects in the sky, it was but the forerunner of many similar cases. And it was also the forerunner of many cases in which human beings have tried to do violence to UFOs. Perhaps a common human reaction to something they do not understand. Many centuries ago, when several great shining silvery disks dived out of the sky toward the troops of Alexander the Great, as the troops were fording a river, most of the soldiers fled the scene. But some of the hardier men stood their ground. And tried to hit the disks with their arrows and with stones from their slings. In April of 1897, when a glowing red dirigible-shaped object indicated that it was about to touch the... down in a cattle lot on the farm of Alexander Hamilton, near Leroy, Kansas, Hamilton and his teenage son and his hired man armed themselves with axes and rushed toward the craft. It quickly rose into the air out of reach, taking with it the hideous creatures which the men reportedly saw in the brightly lighted cabin beneath the craft. Peasants who worked in a beet field in northern Italy reported to the police that when a disc-shaped UFO hovered over them at very low altitude, shortly before dark one evening in 1954, they pelted it with clods and stones, and one man struck it a ringing blow with his shovel. On the night, of April 18th, 1962, a glowing red object was sighted by a ground observer group at Oneida, New York. They immediately notified the military at a nearby airbase, and the thing was picked up on radar. It was tracked by radar inches. The dramatic advent of such fascinating objects as those which were first called flying saucers attracted the inevitable attention of those individuals who let their imaginations run away with their veracity. By 1950, some of these characters were beginning to spin their stories of fantastic conversations with alleged space people. Some of them expanded the stories to include alleged rides in the UFOs. Others published books replete with photographs of what they blandly called spacecraft, motherships and all. Because they all claim to have made contact with the operators of the UFOs, the promoters of these various stories are known as contactees. One of the most famous and the most successful was a fellow who had very limited schooling. but unlimited imagination. He concocted an engrossing tale of his alleged conversation with a gorgeous female space traveler from some distant planet. He also concocted some pictures which the Air Force experts promptly identified as what they called simulated, which indicated charitable restraint on their part, to say the least. This charming fellow voluntarily listed his book with the Library of Congress as a piece of fiction, but he sold the book to the general public as a factual account. I was fascinated by one of his pictures, which he identified as the craft in which he said he had made a trip to another. It took me 8 years to track down the object which he called a spaceship. It was the top of a canister-type vacuum cleaner made in 1937. Somehow, I doubt that very much space travel is actually being done in vacuum. Another of these self-styled space travelers is a middle-aged, bald-headed fellow who was tired of his life as the operator of a small, rocky farm. He attracted attention by telling a story of how he had been kidnapped by the occupants of a flying saucer and forced to go with them to a planet hidden behind the sun. Admittedly, a great spot for a hidden planet. He was gone from home about 2 weeks. When he turned up again, he explained to his wife that he had been forced into the saucer and wasn't even permitted to leave her. The wife not only accepted his remarkable story, she decided that it was too good to be withheld from the general public, and she began booking her imaginative spouse in schools and clubs and county fairs, anywhere that they could. Get an audience together for a few dollars. The husband would sometimes change the story a little bit in the course of regaling his audiences, but when he did that, his ever watchful wife would leap to her feet and remind him how he had told the story in the first place. In 20 years of research in the field of unidentified objects. I have been exposed to scores of these contactee stories. I have never yet interviewed or listened to or read about a single case of this kind, which was, in my opinion, anything. Before the Christian era, yet some of its details have been known to modern science for less than 20 years. The legend tells how strange, glistening metallic vessels were seen in the skies of North. after circling the Earth. So we are told, these craft landed, and the awestruck natives fell down before the men who got out of the vessels. In a short time, the visitors became the rulers of these people, and they built two cities from which the... They ruled for many years. The people prospered under their rulership, and all went well until a grievous misunderstanding arose between the two groups of visitors. Then, says the chronicle, one leader took a group of his companions and they rose into the sky in one of their huge vessels. They flew to a point from which they could see the city in which their opponents dwelt. Yet, all this was said to have taken place many thousands of years ago, and for men of that time to have imagined such things. In such detail would be more fantastic than the story itself. The chronicles of ancient India, in this case, merely add mystery to an enigma. If it did not occur as stated, then how did they know about such things in such precise and accurate detail? And if it did happen as described, who were the strange visitors who sailed their metal ships in the skies of Earth almost 8,000 years? Before man learned to fly. In or about the year 956 AD, the records of an ancient church in Ireland tell of a weird incident which defies explanation other than some early type UFO. It tells how the people attending church were alarmed by a loud crashing noise. They rushed out to find a metal anchor hooked in the wood above the front door of the church. The anchor was at the end of a cable which ran up to a strange craft, hovering in the air a short distance above the church, and a man-like creature, who was apparently trying to dislodge the anchor, was seized when he endeavored to climb back up the cable. But the bishop, who wrote the report for his superior, recently, let us consider the case of Dr. Clyde Tombaugh, who is world famous as the discoverer of the planet Pluto. In 1949, Dr. Tombaugh and several other witnesses, including members of his family, watched a strange cigar-shaped craft with regularly spaced rectangular apertures along the sides, similar in appearance. To windows as the craft moved silently about over the desert near Tombaugh's home in New Mexico. The noted astronomer said in a written statement that he... had the impression that the object was some form of extraterrestrial device. Dr. Seymour Hess of Lowell observed... certain details which indicate that he was seeing the double convex type UFO, which was just beginning to replace the earlier type disc or so-called flying saucer. Dr. Wilkins described what he had seen to the reporters in Atlanta, and when asked if he had any idea what the objects were, he replied, and I quote him, "I certainly do. I saw two flying saucers," end quote. Frank Halstead, who was for 25 years the curator of the University of Minnesota Observatory at Duluth, says that he has seen a total of three UFOs, two of them in one day, and almost at the same time. No professional astronomer ever saw a flying saucer. The record indicates otherwise.
Hey, thank you so much for listening tonight to 90.7 FM WGXC. This has been Tino Gonzalez. You just heard another episode of Faded Discs in Flight Music, a love letter to Wendy Connor's UFO radio archive interspersed with self-recorded ambient music. The music you heard tonight is from my album Book Fair. You can find it online in all the places. Thanks again for listening tonight. Thank you, Wendy. And thank you for listening. I said that twice. Cheers.